Hello, everyone, and welcome to Between the Pages, a podcast on books and sexuality hosted by yours truly, Caitlin Vacora. Okay, awesome. So super excited to have Kate Sloan on the show with us today. Kate Sloan is a writer who specializes in sex, kink, and relationships. Her writing has appeared in publications like Cosmopolitan, Teen Vogue, and Glamour, and her award-winning sex blog, girlyjuice.net, has been going strong for nearly a decade. She also co-hosts the acclaimed podcast, The Dildorks and Question Box. Her book, 101 Kinky Things Even You Can Do, is forthcoming from Lawrence King Publishing in October, and you can keep up with her work by following her on Twitter at girly_juice or Instagram at girly_juice. Welcome, Kate.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. I mentioned this to you in email, but super fan of Girly Juice. And so it's really exciting for me to be able to talk to you. And especially this is our book club episode for April. And so we'll be talking all about Kink, which is edited by Garth Greenwell and R.O. Kwan. I mean, I know we both really enjoyed the book, so I'm excited to get to dive into it with you.
Yeah. Yeah, I was happy when you reached out and asked if I wanted to read that for the episode, because I was like, well, I've already read that. So like, I don't even have to do extra work. That's great.
I know, I linked it. I was like, I'm assuming you know this is like a thing in the world, just based on what you do. So
Yeah, I keep a pretty close eye on the kink books that come out, for sure.
Yeah. Well, one of them is your book that we're going to talk about, I'm sure, later in the episode. But yeah, absolutely. Well, so we always start off with the same kind of intro question, which is, what is the worst sex advice or sex ed tidbit that you've ever received?
When I was in the 10th grade, there was a girl who had a big crush on me, who was a close friend of mine. And I asked my English teacher for advice, which is kind of a weird thing to do, but I went to an artsy weirdo school. So like, we had unusual relationships with our teachers, and I wasn't like attracted to her at all. Like I didn't really have any desire to like date her or anything, but she was like really aggressively hitting on me. And my English teacher was like, you don't often get opportunities in life where someone presents themselves to you on a silver platter. So I think you should go for it. Which is like true, but also I don't think it's good advice. Like, now that I've been an adult human for like much longer, I really don't think that is a good enough like reason to have sex with someone.
No. And like, also, yeah, if someone's like clearly expressing that they're like not comfortable and are not interested in reciprocating any of the feelings, like, to be like, well, you might as well, like, you know, hop on it. Like, that just feels like a very weird thing, especially for an English teacher or any type of like supportive adult to say.
Yeah. That teacher later was fired from his position for, I don't know exactly why, but I assume it was something like that.
It all checks out. All the dots are coming together, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, I've just recently added this like kind of corollary question of like, what is the best sex advice that you've received? Because I feel like we need something positive in here, because we all get a lot of like obviously negative like sex ed messaging and all that. So do you have like something that sticks out in your mind as kind of the best sex advice?
Yeah, it's probably something you've heard a lot before in asking this question, which is just communication is the most important thing. Like, it really is the simplest and best piece of sex advice. And like, I spend a lot of time on the r/sex subreddit, and I would say like 70% of the questions there could be answered by, talk to your partner about this. Like, we're not going to know. We're strangers on the internet.
That's like so true of all of Reddit in general, but like in particular, and it's like, communication is such an like quote unquote easy answer, but it also is like obviously like super layered and nuanced. And there's like a lot of reasons why it's hard, primarily because we just are never taught how to communicate, particularly right, in like sexual relationships. And so, but it is like kind of amazing, like the number of problems that would be solved by literally just like saying, hi, this is how I'm feeling. This is a problem. Can we talk about it?
Yeah. Like, it's the scariest thing, which is why people are scared to do it and are asking strangers to provide any other potential solution. But like, the reason it's so scary is because it involves honesty, which is what you need to have a functioning sexual relationship.
I know. It should not be news, but like, it is news.
Yeah. So,
yeah, absolutely. Well, I know I gave like the little like intro bio at the beginning, but I'm curious kind of the origin story of your blog, Girly Juice, which is almost at the 10-year mark, which is amazing.
Thank you. Yeah, that's a really long time to have been writing a blog. And also, it is weird to be still like making a living from blogging in 2021. I think a lot of people are like, that's not still happening, is it? And I'm like, I guess it is, because I'm still making money. But so Girly Juice, I started it during a gap year I took between high school and university when I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my life. And I was doing a bunch of different sort of odd jobs that year. I was coaching my high school improv team and I was doing some customer service. And I applied for a job at a sex shop and I didn't get the job, but I thought I should probably like check to make sure that my sex toy knowledge is as up to date as I hope that it is. And in doing that, I found sex toy review blogs like heyepiphora.com and dangerouslily.com that were doing this really cool blend of like sex toy reviews and also like humor writing and writing about their own experiences and sexuality outside of sex toys as well, which I found very compelling as someone who had like always been a sex nerd and always been interested in writing. So I started this blog. I really didn't think it was going to last. I, at that time, had a problem with like committing to projects. But yeah, it's just, I think I picked the right topic because I think sex is like the one topic that I really feel like I could write about forever. So like 9 years later, I really do feel like I have not run out of things to talk about.
Yeah, seriously. There's so many like layers, so much nuance to kind of pick apart. And I think also like the timing of how your blog started is kind of perfect in terms of like, I mean, so like, it's funny because I feel like the blog like world in general, like people are like reading less blogs, but I feel like the specific subset of like sex blogs really kind of took off within probably a couple years of like after you started your blog of like, you know, I'm thinking like 2012, 2013, 2014. I feel like there was just like a spate of just like all these bloggers coming out and talking about this. And yeah, I think that just kind of like worked out really nicely for kind of what you were trying to do as well.
Yeah, it's a really, really vibrant space, the sex blogging space. And I think it has a lot to do with like the limitations that are put on people making sex media. Like, as you know, it can be really hard to have a following on Twitter or on Instagram or even on Patreon if you're making sex related content. It's so easy to get kicked off. Like, I was kicked off of PayPal and it was like one of the most panic inducing things that's ever happened to me. I literally was like, I'm going to have to get a different job because I take most of my payments through PayPal and they are against sexually explicit materials. They eventually reinstated it. But yeah, I mean, it is a very like scary and marginalized place from which to be making art. So I think a lot of people turn to blogging as like, it's a space that you can create for yourself. You can host it yourself. You can say what you want and fucking Patreon can't tell you not to.
Like, if I have to like bleep out sexuality one more time on any of these platforms, it just drives me up a wall. And like, I'm finding that with Instagram too, of just like, I have to put the star with like for the E or like do the three. Yeah. And I'm just like, there's just so many, like, just so many ways that like they make it really, really hard to like get any type of like sexuality related content out there. And yeah, I mean, that could be its whole other like podcast episode with itself. but I think you're totally right that like that blogging kind of creates that safer space where you can really just make it your own and talk about what you want to talk about. And you can like plug the content that you want to share like on these other like social media platforms and like whatever, or Patreon. And so it's kind of like, it is kind of a way to kind of get around some of that censorship. Ugh, sigh. Let's talk about Happier Things, aka your book. So you're writing a book, which is amazing. So can you tell us about 101 Kinky Things Even You Can Do and sort of what you hope the book will add to the space of sexuality and kink?
Yeah, sure. It's actually already written because there was this absurd like long timeline because it's illustrated. So I had to get the text in pretty early so that the illustrator could work on it. And the illustrations are beautiful. They're really gorgeous. I knew that it would be a great book to be illustrated because there are a lot of kink acts that are mentioned in it that if you'd never heard of them before, you'd be like, well, how does that work? Like, I'm thinking of things like face sitting or face fucking. But yeah, so 101 Kinky Things Even You Can Do is a very long title. And it is my book that's coming out in October that is an introduction to 101 different kinks. I think it's, or I hope it's going to be like a really valuable addition to the kind of like beginner kink book space, because my personal experience reading those types of things is either they're like super, super basic, like they focus on the really basics like consent negotiation and stuff like that, as well as like some of the best known kinks or like the kinks that vanilla people are likeliest to know about and to want to wade into, so like bondage, spanking, dominance and submission, that kind of thing. And I think a lot of them like don't include information on kind of like wackier or like more uncommon kinks that a lot of people also have. And then the other thing I was noticing in like beginner kink books is a lot of them take this really hard line about safety and say like, well, you shouldn't do XYZ things because it's unsafe. Like, don't do them at all. And I'm very risk aware, consensual kink. Like, that's very much my framework. And so almost every item in the book has a little bit of info, at least, about how to do it safely and like why it might not be considered safe, because I really want to be able to trust my readers to make their own decisions about that rather than treating them like children and acting as if you can't do a thing just because it's risky.
That's super interesting to hear about the distinction of that. Cause I think, I mean, I identify as like vanilla. And so like, I'm like aware of kink and I like understand it just from like a sexuality educator standpoint, but I also like, I didn't know about like, oh, you know, there's certain things that are just deemed unsafe by sort of like the like mainstream kink or whatever. And I think a core tenet of kink in the way that I have understood it in the past is like the consent is key, right? Like like, and when you have that, you know, you are able to do all sorts of things. Like there's not something that's off limits if it is between consenting individuals, right? And so like it's interesting that the general like consensus or the general framework in the past has been like, oh no, this is something that will always be unsafe, even with the consent. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking of specifically choking is one of these. There are some kink educators who are very like, you can die from choking. Like people have died, including from kinky choking, unintentional deaths. That's a real thing. However, I view it similarly to like abstinence only sex education, where like you can say all you want, don't do that, don't have sex, it's bad for you, or it's bad morally or whatever. People are still gonna do it. You actually can't stop them. And like they might as well be equipped with the information that they need to do it safely.
Totally, totally. And I think that that's part of the power of kink, right? Is that it gives you a safer space to explore some of the things that you are interested in. And I'm thinking specifically, and I know this could be triggering, so just let me know if this is not something you want to talk about, but I'm thinking specifically of like rape fantasies or non-consensual sex fantasies. That's part of kink, right? And so there can be sort of the myth of like, oh, this is never okay, right? Like this is never something that is acceptable and for those who don't know, I guess I should do a little like rewind back up, explain, but like, you know, non-consensual kink can basically include a scene that involves non-consensual sex, but it is consensual between the two partners, right?
Yeah. And like it's like you're role-playing the idea of non-consent, right, but within a framework of like, we have explicitly agreed that this actually is okay. Usually with like safe words and ways of checking in. And I agree, like even in the kink space, that is sometimes really stigmatized, which is interesting to me. To me, it's just a type of sort of like play acting and, you know, experimenting in really psychologically tricky waters, which is like a lot of what kink is just in general. And I think it's kind of odd when people like take a judgmental stance toward it when they could just as easily say like, I'm not into that. I don't want to do that personally.
Yeah, totally. And I think like, it also, like I've heard, it can be really empowering for survivors of sexual violence to be able to sort of take back control around like non-consensual play, right? Because it is consensual, right? Because you do have that pre-agreed upon, you know, agreement. And then you also have like safe words to be able to control the situation to a certain extent in the moment. And so like, I can also see that being super beneficial to folks, but yeah, like it's not for everyone. And like, you don't have to do it. And I think overall, that's my like party line. Of kink. I'm like, you don't have to do it if you don't want to. Like, it's fine.
Yeah, it reminds me of when people find out that I am non-monogamous. Sometimes they're like, oh, I could never do that. And it's like, well, yeah, I mean, you don't have to. Like, yeah. The fact that I do it does not mean that you have to do it. It's really fine.
I think the concept of kink can be really interesting to like explore, both if you identify as kinky or if you're not. I think it can mean a lot of different things for a lot of different people. So I'm curious kind of what does kink mean to you and sort of how does it show up in your life and in your work as a sex writer?
Yeah, I thought it was vanilla for a long time. I think I thought I was vanilla till I was like 23 or 24. And it was because a lot of the media models of kink that I had seen up to that point depicted it as being kind of like mean or punitive or really severe or intense, which is just not ever what I was drawn to. Like I never wanted to be the bad girl. I never wanted to be punished. I wanted to be a good girl. I wanted to be taken care of and treated well in kink. And I wanted that submissive role, but like I see it as more of like a kind of like a Veruca Salt archetype. Like, her dad is not mean to her. Like, sometimes he tries to be a bit strict, but like basically his whole thing is he just wants to like spoil her. I'm not quite as bratty as Veruca Salt, but yeah. So when I was like 23 or 24, I started wading into kink. I had an interest in spanking. Still do. That's still probably one of my main kinks. And I also like tiptoed very carefully into like daddy dom little girl play, which I would say is my main kink now, but because it's so taboo in our culture, like I took a long time to kind of like get around to trying it and identifying as someone who is into that. After some time of like being into kink personally and trying things out, I started incorporating it into my writing. And I would say, yeah, it's like a pretty central part of my writing now, because it's a pretty central part of how I see my relationships and just like how I understand the world. I think it's given me a lot of gifts in terms of like just a different way to look at the world, power dynamics and consent and communication and all that stuff that's involved in kink. And it helps me both like in a sexual way and also like outside of that. Like, I really enjoy kind of the lifestyle aspects of kink. I wrote my book largely with the help of my dominant, who was like assigning certain tasks and deadlines during that process and like certain rewards for completing certain milestones. So yeah, it's pretty much pervaded my whole life at this point.
That's so cool. Yeah. And could you talk a little bit about sort of like how kink shows up in life, like in it? Because I think there's a lot of conversation in like non-kinky circles about like what it looks like in the bedroom and like what it looks like sexually. But like, I feel like that like lifestyle side of things is not really discussed. So yeah, I'm wondering if you can elaborate a little bit on that.
Yeah, it's interesting. It seems like it's a thing that a lot of vanilla people either don't know about or think is sort of relegated to fantasy. But actually, I would say like about half, maybe more, of the kinky people I know incorporate some element of like out of the bedroom lifestyle type kink. So for me, one of the things that my dominant does that's helpful is making sure that I stay on top of my self-care, because I have a chronic pain disorder. And so in times of stress, it tends to flare up. And so it's really helpful to have someone kind of bossing me into taking better care of myself, taking breaks when I need to, like taking baths when I need to, stuff like that. And another place that I've been noticing this a lot lately is my partner and I got married a few months ago. And
oh, congrats.
Thank you. And I had never lived with a partner before. And one of the things I had always kind of been worried about was like division of household labor, just because like for women, it's, you know, often a difficult thing in marriages. And kink gives us a framework through which each of us can have different like household tasks that are assigned to us. And it's very explicit and clear, as opposed to one person doing a bunch of stuff because no one else is doing it, or one person doing a thing but feeling resentful about it because their partner never does it or whatever. Kink gives us a way to talk about these things that's like really, really clear and doesn't make me feel guilty if I don't do a thing I was supposed to do or whatever, because I know exactly what's expected of me, which is really nice.
Yeah, I feel like the boundary setting is just so much more explicit in mm-hmm. kink than in life usually. and so like, it's nice to be able to, yeah, like be able to set those boundaries and then also be like explicit in your communication around those boundaries as well. Mm-hmm. Like it just provides a framework that we just don't have sort of in like the non-kink world of like, yeah, like you do, like if you are constantly like emptying the dishwasher or something, like you're going to be resentful towards it mm-hmm. unless you like have sort of that like, yeah, explicit, like you're doing this thing. Yeah. I'm kind of curious. Okay. So like, how does it differ from like, then like a chore chart? Do you know what I mean? Like,
Yeah, some people who I know who are kinky do have like a chore chart or like a star chart type of thing. I've had a thing with my dominant for a long time where my to-do list for the day is kept in a note in the notes app. So like we both have access to it, which is really helpful for me for just day-to-day motivation to get work tasks done and personal tasks and whatnot. But lately, how we've been doing it is if there's something my partner wants me to do, like household-wise, they'll just add that to my list. So I just will look at that and see that that's on there, which like as someone who has some like emotional trauma, childhood stuff about like people getting mad at me for not doing certain household tasks that I didn't know I was supposed to be doing, like that is really helpful for me to know exactly what I'm supposed to do and then be able to check it off.
Oh, I love that. That's such a good system.
Yeah, it's been really helpful for me.
Yeah. And I think like your own experience, both kind of like in work and life with kink, really gives you an awesome framework to read books like Kink, obviously, where you have sort of like that personal experience and professional experience that really kind of adds like layers onto your analysis of the book. So I'm wondering if we can kind of transition to talking about Kink. Oh, okay. So you mentioned you read it already, which is amazing. So overall, like what did you think of it?
I really liked it. I thought it was very cool to see writers who don't normally write about sex, or at least who don't normally focus their work primarily on sex, tackling those topics, like Roxane Gay and Brandon Taylor, like people who I haven't really seen get into kink discussions all that much publicly. And I think that it did something interesting, which is sort of like humanize kink and contextualize it within the relationships between these characters, because I think kink is often misunderstood as something that sort of only weird perverts do. And like, some people think, like, I don't know anyone kinky. Like, if I knew anyone kinky, I would know, right? Because it would be obvious that they're kinky, and that's just not the case. And I think that these stories illustrate really well, like, the ways in which many different kinds of people can incorporate many different kinds of kinks into their sex lives. And it can be really filthy and out there, but it can also be just like really romantic and intimate.
I think that's totally true. And I loved like the range of stories that were in this collection, right? Like, there were so many ways that kink showed up in different ways for different people, and like being able to like, you know, be in their head, even for like a short story at length of time. I do think that there's like that humanizing element of like, yeah, these are like real people. And sometimes we get real glimpses into their life. And then like, we also like get to see them explore this kinky relationship or this kink in the, within themselves or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was really, really interesting. Yeah. Like, so of the story collection, was there any like story that you like are still thinking about or really resonated with you?
Yeah, I went into it like really excited to read Brandon Taylor's story. I love Brandon's writing. I read his novel Real Life a while ago and thought it was so beautiful. His prose is just stunning, and he deals with like racism and classism in really interesting ways. And his story in Kink like kind of is about those themes as well, called Oh Youth. And it's about a young Black man who is sort of dating an older white couple. In kind of a, it's sort of ambiguous, I think, like what exactly, like how exactly these people think of their relationship, but I saw it sort of as like a sugar baby, sugar mama slash daddy type of relationship, because there is some like spoiling him or like buying him things or giving him money. And the story takes place at a dinner party with all these like older white friends of the couple that he's dating. And it's just this really interesting navigation of like being clearly the person who sticks out in this room, the power dynamics in those relationships that are both within the kink that they're doing and then also in real life. Yeah, I just think that Brandon is such a wonderful writer, and like he has such a talent for like really subtle, barely perceptible conflict, which I think is like a really tough thing to write. It's one of those things that like if you're there, you can feel it, but it doesn't always come through in writing. There's a great like dinner party scene in his novel that is so that. I think it's also a dinner party where he's doing a similar thing in this story. And it's just, yeah, it's both kinky and also like excites that part of my brain that is really excited by like gossip.
Yeah, I love Brandon's writing as well. And I found it interesting because, yeah, like the main character, the young Black man in O Youth, you know, we also saw a couple of flashback scenes of like, you know, his previous relationship with his professor, and sort of like the origin story of like, you know, how he got into this type of like sugar baby, like, you know, lifestyle, business, whatever. Like, I thought that was really interesting too. And then at the end, you know, we saw a lot of like the tension coming to a head with his relationship with the wife and the couple. And, you know, he ended up like, you know, kind of spoiler if you haven't read it yet, like he ended up leaving at the end in a way of like, you know, she was like, it'll be damaging to my relationship if you stay. And it was just like this really beautiful exploration of like relationships and kink and just like, you know, how those power dynamics kind of show up in a lot of like racialized and like genderized ways, you know?
Yeah. And it reminded me a lot of some of my own experiences. I'm not Black, so I don't have like the racial aspect of this power dynamic differential, but I did have a sugar daddy at one point who was like quite a bit older than me, had quite a bit more money than I do, of course. And it is this really strange dynamic in terms of power, because it was sort of like half personal and half professional, in the sense that like it was technically a sex work interaction, but he was paying for this more like casual girlfriend experience style of expression. Like, I was kind of into him, but not enough that I would have like spent that much time with him if I wasn't being paid for it. So it was this very weird blend of motivations for that relationship. And I really saw that reflected in this story. So I was, yeah, I was like laughing and crying a little bit. And I just love Brandon's writing. I think it's just so vivid and wonderful.
It's stunning. You know, he has a short story collection coming out.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Yeah. It's called, I think it's called Filthy Animals. And the cover is stunning. And I'm just like, ugh, like he's wonderful. yeah, I really enjoyed that one too. I'm trying to think, I mean, I don't know. I think that there's so many elements that I appreciated kind of throughout, which was kind of cool. Like there was like a moment in almost every story that just kind of was like a gut punch to me of like, ooh, like I feel that, mm-hmm. I identify with that. And as someone reading it with like a non-kinky like lifestyle lens, I thought that was really powerful to like recognize of like, yeah, like, you know, obviously, you know, folks who, I shouldn't say obviously, you know, hopefully folks who identify as kinky will see themselves reflected in some elements of this story, but also like it's for non-kinky people too. And it normalizes a lot of kink and a lot of like why people like are drawn to kink mm-hmm. or choose to like live kinky lifestyles. And so I don't know, I think there's like a lot of like speculation about like where kink comes from, which I'm sure you're yep. aware of, you know, yep. and not being inside the community, like my understanding is that like, you know, sometimes kink can be linked to past experiences and sometimes it's not, and it's all like totally valid expressions of kink. And so like, I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about like that myth that like kink always comes from past trauma or like whatever, like that there's like, that it's always linked to that like traumatic experience.
Yeah, I'm really glad you asked about this because this is actually one of my favorite topics, fetish formation. If you'll permit me a brief sex nerdy digression, there's like a number of different theories about fetish formation. I think a lot of them are quite compelling. There's some people who say that they're just like born this way. There's some people who say that they had some kind of childhood experience that imbued them with a kink. There's some proponents of like a classical conditioning type theory, which like there was a study that tried to give men a fetish for rubber boots by pairing images of rubber boots with like sexy stimuli, like naked women and that kind of thing. And they actually did succeed in sort of giving these men like a mild fetish, which is interesting. And then there's also a theory of like neural proximity. Like a lot of people think the reason foot fetishes are so common is that the area of the brain that controls sensation in the feet is next to the area that controls sensation in the genitals. So there might be some kind of like neurological crosstalk there. But yeah, there does seem to be like a really like reigning idea that kink comes from trauma in some way. And I think I'm an interesting person to talk about this because like I am kinky and I am a trauma survivor. And actually my kinks are like pretty directly related to my traumas. Like I am a person who has trauma that some people would call daddy issues. I am a person who was non-consensually spanked as punishment as a child in a way that felt traumatic to me. The writer Jillian Keenan, who's a spanking fetishist, talks a lot about this, about like if your kid happens to have a spanking fetish and you don't know that and you spank them, they may perceive that as sexual assault. They may experience that as sexual assault, which I think is sort of what happened to me. And so, I mean, in my case, like having done a lot of therapy and self-reflection, I don't think that my kinks came from my trauma. I think that they either predated it or are separate from it. But at the same time, I just don't think that it's like the most relevant factor. Like I think, you know, we have the kinks that we have, we have the sexuality that we have. We know from, you know, conversion therapy and that kind of thing that trying to change your sexuality is not effective and sometimes is actively damaging. So I think it's really harmful when people are like, well, you're kinky because you're fucked up. And it's like, well, what am I supposed to do with that information? I can't become not kinky. I can't become not fucked up. I can try, but I don't think I can succeed. So I kind of feel like I have the sexuality that I have. That's what I have to work with. And, you know, I can work on my trauma separately. But as you were mentioning earlier, like I've also found kink an interesting place to like work through some of that trauma. So yeah, I think it's a very complicated subject. I really don't think it's black and white, but I wish that kink was not so stigmatized as being something that only ever comes from trauma, because I don't think that's the case.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that, because I think that that's really powerful to like hear that like you can have past experiences of trauma and you can also be kinky, and sometimes they're related, but also like it doesn't really matter if they're related or not. I think that mm-hmm. that's sort of an important distinction. I think folks can get really wrapped up in like sort of that origin of kink and like, yeah, like if it's helpful for you to understand some of those linkages, like awesome, do that self-exploration and that self-work. But at the same time, like, I don't know, like our whole sexuality and our whole like personality is all like, you know, based on like past experiences. Like that is right, just like exactly. that's how we like learn how to be a person, right? Yeah. So like, you know, I think kink is one facet of that, but like, yeah, that's how we understand like, you know, what turns us on in general, right? It, like kinky or not. And like, I think that it's given more weight to folks who are kinky, like mm-hmm. in these types of conversations, right? Like it's given more weight of like, oh, well, you had this in your past, when like another type of like sexual fetish isn't given that same weight of like, oh, well, it's probably because you have that traumatic past, right? Like it's right. just, it's, yeah. it's not even, and there's no particular reason other than the fact that we live in a sex negative shamed society, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, it reminds me of the discussion that's been ongoing forever in feminist circles about like, you know, if I as a woman enjoy wearing dresses and lipstick and enjoy when men look at me desirously, is that an inherent thing that I genuinely authentically want and I'm allowed to want, or is that something that was sort of instilled in me by the patriarchy? And my view on that is sort of like, it is both. I think it can be both. And also I think if something was instilled in you by the patriarchy, but you found a way to feel joyous and free when you do it, I mean, I think that that's fine. Like I often dress up really femme to go to like queer events or kinky events, and it makes me feel very powerful. It makes me feel very seen and like who I actually am as a person, even if like there's no male gaze to speak of in that room. Like it's just a thing that makes me feel good. And yeah, part of the reason why it makes me feel good is that I've picked that up societally in some way. But that doesn't mean that it's like inherently evil. There are ways to play with that that are not evil at all.
No, and I think that like there's a way to be cognizant of like the fact that it's like rooted in patriarchy or any type mm-hmm. of ism, really, because like that is the water that we're swimming in. Like there, it's yep. impossible to discern, do I like this objectively? Because there's not really an objective way of living in the world, right? Everything is subjective. Everything mm-hmm. is really impacted by the culture that we live in. And like, yeah, I'm a big proponent of like always be questioning, right? Like just always be like, oh, why mm-hmm. do I think that way? And then like, you know, you yeah. can come to the conclusion of like, yeah, cool. It's kind of rooted in patriarchy, kind of rooted in what I want to do. That's fine. Right. Like, well, so, okay. One of the other themes that I saw throughout the stories was just like this idea of like inhabiting like a character or like taking on a new facet of yourself as like mm-hmm. a part of like your kink. What role do you see that like that character work or role playing has within kink?
Yeah, it reminds me of what we talked about earlier with regards to consensual non-consent, because one of the reigning theories about why rape fantasies are so popular among women, and they are quite popular, is that it sort of takes away their agency and makes the sex that they have someone else's fault in a world that tells women that we shouldn't be sexually assertive, that we shouldn't have desires, and we certainly shouldn't pursue them. So there's something that sort of takes some guilt away if the sex is literally forced on you, even if it's sex that you want. So I think that there can be something to that with regards to role play in general, like, you know, I don't really want this thing. I'm not really doing this thing. It's the character who wants and is doing this thing. I've certainly found it freeing in that way. And a lot of times when I was thinking about a new kink that I wasn't sure if I was really into it, like role play would be a fun way to explore that. And also just for me personally, like with having a chronic pain disorder, medical play has been an interesting way for my partner to take care of me very literally, but in this setting where that is acceptable. And I don't need to feel guilty about that, because in the role play, I'm literally paying them to do so. Or like role playing as a masseuse and a client, or even like a sex worker and a client, can help with like alleviating my sort of anxiety about needing to be taken care of or wanting to kind of relax and have things done to me. And also, I mean, my spouse is non-binary, and I know that a lot of people who are trans and non-binary explore different kind of like gender presentations, gender expressions through role play, like maybe even before they fully acknowledge, you know, gender feelings out loud in real life to themselves and the people in their lives. I think it can be a really, really powerful space for a lot of different people. But also, like, I studied improv in high school, so like I may be particularly like inclined towards role play because I find it fun in a sort of creative and not necessarily even sexual way sometimes.
I love that. I'm a former theater kid.
Amazing.
From high school. Yeah. So I can like fully identify.
I love to meet fellow improv nerds.
I know. I did it as an adult for a while back when in-person things were a thing. Yeah. I think that that's totally true, that like there's a way to explore things in a way that's like separated from maybe some of like your insecurities or like your ways of like being in your own head. Like it's just a way of kind of getting out of your head, right? Like it's a way to say, yeah, okay, well, this is the character, and kind of like third person it in a way that like I think can be really freeing, especially when there are some of those like hangups. Yeah, I think like, and doing it in a safe way too. Like I think that there's like a safety in having super clear like boundaries and having a super clear character and like, oh, this is what we're gonna do here. There's a lot of like fun things that can come from exploring what this character like does and feels and like kind of being able to embody someone else for a little bit.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people worry about role play that there wouldn't be a way to easily communicate if something is going wrong, if you're feeling uncomfortable, if you want to kind of end the scene or whatever. And you can just have basic safe words. But my friend Bex, who I co-host my podcast, The Dildorks, with, introduced me to a really cool idea, which is having certain like code phrases that you use within role plays that mean certain things. So he was doing like a teenage boy with younger teenage girl role play with his partner. And if the younger person said like, "You're scaring me," like that would mean maybe take it down a notch. And there was another phrase I don't remember that meant like maybe take it up a notch. And I think stuff like that can be really fun. And if you can kind of push through the feeling of like silliness or self-consciousness, which I know a lot of people struggle with, it can be just a really fun way to like creatively collaborate with a partner on something really sexy and fun.
I love that. Yeah. I like framing it as like a creative collaboration, because I think that mm-hmm. that like takes a little bit of like the pressure off, you know, yeah. Like when it's just like, oh, we're just creating this like really fun thing. And especially like, yeah, like the artist in me is like very like attached to that like idea of like creative collaboration. Mm-hmm. One other piece that actually kind of is related to what we were talking about is I think in Trust by Larissa Pham, mm-hmm. which I loved as well. That was one that really stuck with me. You saw like this main character, this woman who was very kind of controlled throughout her life.
Yeah.
You know, she's an Asian American woman. And, you know, there's like direct language about how she was like felt very in control, very repressed in her life, and like really found that loss of control through being submissive during sex. And so I'm wondering if that's like kind of a common parallel of that kind of control versus like losing control for folks who identify as subs.
Yeah, I think it can be. I am very much a submissive identifying person. I'm one of those people who feels like it really is part of my sexual orientation, in the sense that like the gender of the people I'm attracted to is not as important as like, do they have a dominant energy? Do they make me feel flustered and giggly? And definitely surrender is a piece of that. Like I'm really enjoying staying with my spouse during the pandemic and having this sort of daily routine of like, we're both stressed out at work during the day. And then at night we have this like kinky playtime where I can sort of relax. And there's been a fair amount of research done on kind of the headspaces and neurological states that kink can promote in people. And subspace, which is the sort of headspace that you can get into as a sub or as someone like receiving a lot of sensation, has a lot of commonalities with like flow state or even like a meditation or trance type of headspace, in that it can be very relaxing and it can be a moment where your mind actually goes quiet, which for me as a person with depression and anxiety disorder and a lot of chronic pain, like to be able to kind of escape my body, escape my mind is so transformative. There are a lot of other ways in my life that I have tried to escape my body and escape my mind that have not been strictly healthy, that if I told them to a doctor, they'd be like, maybe don't do that. Mm-hmm. And there are some doctors who would say that about kink as well, for sure. But kink to me feels like a safer space to do that kind of thing. Certainly like a different place to reroute kind of like self-harm type impulses, because someone else hurting me, someone who loves me and is paying attention to my signals, is going to do a much better job and keep me much safer than I would if I was trying to do it to myself. But yeah, certainly I find that the surrender is an important aspect of it. And it just is a thing I have not really experienced in vanilla sex. I always had the sense in vanilla sex that my mind was on, what do I look like? Or am I performing my sexuality correctly? Am I, you know, appealing to the person I'm having sex with? And there's still a little bit of that in kink. I think that's just sort of the nature of being an anxious person, being a person who's like insecure about themselves. But it is so much easier to put that away in kink, especially when I'm kind of role-playing as a little girl, which is something I do often, where I kind of go into this like childlike headspace where my adult concerns are of no matter to me. Like, they're just out of my head. It doesn't matter, which is very, very nice.
I love that. That's such an interesting point about like headspace and like, yeah, like that connection. I hadn't seen that research on like the connection between like meditation or mindfulness or whatever and and kind of in that sub headspace. And I think also like it kind of reminds me of therapeutic like concept. I'm totally forgetting on like what it actually like the title of like the concept is, but it's like, it's basically like parts work where you like kind of identify like how old, you know, your part, like this part of yourself that's feeling this way is.
Like and structural you, like, dissociation type.
That sounds very right. I'm sure.
That's that literally the type of trauma therapy I'm in. And like part of why I pursued that type of therapy was I was like, I do feel like there are parts of me, and kink did introduce me to some of those parts. So I think that you're bang on with that comparison. It's, to me, it feels very similar.
Totally. Yeah. Cause it's a way to sort of dissociate, like the title says, like, you know, dissociate that particular feeling or like, or this like particular trauma, in a way that like feels really, really freeing it, and being able to like label it. And especially like, you know, I do some of that work with my therapist too. And like, she does a lot of like, you know, like how old is this person? And like, sometimes I'll try to like talk to a part like an adult. And she's like, no, like your 5-year-old is not going to like understand this logic. Right. And so it's kind of that same concept of like, yeah, like you're able to like be separated from yourself and be able to actually like be in the moment and experiencing the things versus like trying to kind of analyze it within your head.
Yeah, I've found it really helpful that my therapist, I was going to say happens to be, but actually I specifically sought out someone who was kink conscious and kink positive, because as I said, like the way I view the world is so much filtered through kink at this point, and my kinky relationships are very, very important to just like how my life works. And I was doing a thing, I was supposed to say I was doing a scene with my therapist. I was doing a session with my therapist recently where we were going into some really profound like childhood trauma stuff. And she was like, you know, this might emotionally overwhelm you. Like, are you going to be okay? Are you going to be able to like tell me if you want to back off? And I was like, could we actually use like a kink style, like safe word system? Like, could I say yellow if I need you to slow down and red if I need you to stop? And she got so excited. She was like, yes, this is perfect. This is exactly what we should do. And that was just like yet another example of where kink like came into my everyday life and, you know, provided a really, really helpful innovation in a space where like I would have had a really hard time, I think, saying through the tears, I'm sorry, but I need to stop. I mean, that's a lot of words when you're that emotional.
I love that so much. And I think that's a really good reminder for folks listening who might identify as kinky. Like, you can look for a kink-friendly therapist. Like, they exist. Yep. It is hard to find sometimes, I would imagine. But like, I go to a therapist that's like LGBTQ friendly, and like, that's hard to find. So I would imagine like, you know, kink is also similarly like, it is hard to find. But like, I think that's an important reminder that like, yeah, like that can be an orientation in which you like seek other aspects of your life.
Yeah, for sure. I did a bunch of consultation calls with therapists before I decided on one. And there were a few things that I brought up that I needed them to be okay with, like the fact that a lot of my friends and my spouse are trans and or non-binary, but also like, I needed them to be okay with the fact that I am kinky and I am a trauma survivor, and those things may or may not be related, but I don't want my therapist to assume that they absolutely are related. I don't want my therapist to stigmatize kink. And the person who is now my therapist, I said that was like, oh, totally. I completely get that. That must be so frustrating that people do that. And I promise I will not do that. And that is basically why I chose her.
Oh, I love that so much. Ugh, yeah. No, it's super important. And it's something that I think a lot of times is conflated. Yeah, totally makes sense. So our closing question is, do you have kind of a favorite sexuality related read to recommend to folks?
I was glancing at your feed today and I actually saw that the last episode you did was with Angela Chen, who I was going to recommend her book, Ace.
So good.
It's so good. It's a must read, I think, for anyone who is asexual or thinks they might be or is interested in asexuality or thinks they have a friend or a partner who might be ace. It is so good. I have a couple more I'd like to say.
Oh my gosh. All the reads.
Okay. The Monster Under the Bed is a book by my friend Joellen Naughty. And it's about the intersections between sex and depression. I know that you've talked about this one as well. It's so, so great. And another one that I think is kind of similar-ish to the kink book that I think people might like if they liked kink is You Know You Want This by Kristen Rupenian. I hope I'm pronouncing her name correctly. She's the writer who wrote the story Cat Person that went viral.
Oh, yes.
And then she wrote this collection of short stories. And in much the same way that Cat Person does, they all kind of take on complications of consent, like situations that are really, really difficult to figure out, like what the ethical thing is as far as consent goes. Some of it is kinky and some of it is just sort of fucked up. Even as like a longtime kink educator, I found myself reading this book and in every story, there's at least one moment where I was like, huh, like, I don't know what I would do in this situation. I don't know what the right ethical choice would be. And it's also, of course, like beautiful, evocative writing because she's great. So would recommend that.
I love that. That's been on my radar. I haven't read it yet. I like still think about Cat Person to this day.
Right? It sticks with you.
It really does. It's just I'll link it in the show notes if folks haven't read that essay. I am so fascinated by these like questions of consent and like that sort of like gray area and where does the line go, and because I think we're like super bad at drawing the line as individuals and as a society, and so I'm always like very interested in that exploration, so I'll have to put that on my list. I'm excited.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, great recommendations. Angela was also on the podcast too. If you haven't listened to that episode, she's so wonderful.
I downloaded it and I was like, must listen to this for real because I think she's so brilliant.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I was like, I just, that book like is one of the ones that I am just going to like remember forever. And like, I had it on, I read it on ebook and I was like, I think I need a print copy and I need to like underline everything.
Yeah. That's so, when you know it's good.
Yeah. You're like, okay, I need it in this some other format. So, yeah. Awesome. Well, those are great recommendations. And yeah. So where can the audience kind of support your work? Where can they find you?
Yeah, so I have a blog at girlyjuice.net. We write about sex, kink, dating, fashion, beauty, mental health, a whole bunch of things. I also have two podcasts. One of them is called The Dildorks, and it is dorky discourse on sex, dating, and masturbating. And the other one is called Question Box, and it is the game show podcast of shockingly personal questions. So what both of those shows have in common is I get to talk to people about really weird shit that makes them mildly uncomfortable, but that they're willing to talk about because they've come on to our show. And then I also have, as I mentioned, like a book coming out in October. It's available for pre-order right now all around the world. It's at 101kinkythings.com, as in 101kinkythings.com. And I'm really excited for that to come out. It's physically beautiful. There's like gold foil text on the cover and it's going to be a really stunning book and I'm excited for it.
I was looking at that. I was looking on your website today and I was like, okay, gold foil. Yes.
Yeah. It's very striking. I wasn't sure about it at first because like my usual aesthetic style is very sort of like pink and blue and just like fun and girly. And then they showed me this thing that was very kind of like minimalistic and sexy. And I was like, ooh, like, yes. But also I never would have thought of that. Because I'm not a designer.
It like fits. Yeah, it fits really well with like the title, I think. I'm super excited for it and I will be pre-ordering. So
thank you.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. And yeah, thanks so much for your time. And it's really fun to talk to you.
Yeah, you too. Thanks so much for having me.